If you're a smoker or dipper looking to make a change, you really only need one reason to do it. But with Zyn nicotine pouches, you can find many. Zyn is America's number one nicotine pouch. It's made with only 6 simple ingredients. Plus, Zyn is the only nicotine pouch with a 10-day hassle-free trial. There are lots of options when it comes to nicotine satisfaction, but there's only one Zyn. Find your Zyn online or in a store near you at zyn.com/find. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting 2 young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for joining me for another triumphant episode of Off the Beat, where I am proud to be your host, Brian Baumgartner. You know, one thing that really characterized 2023 for me, and well, for everyone else who works in entertainment or who simply enjoys entertainment, was the writers and actors strike. It was a historic moment that changed the landscape of film and television. And it also changed this podcast just a little bit because we were not allowed to promote or talk about our work. Now, this was a curse and it was, in fact, a blessing for me because, one, I couldn't get to interview as many of my fellow actors, which I typically do. But two, I was allowed to lean into my love for and my Rolodex of great athletes and sports figures, and learn more about how they climbed their own ladder to success. So to get back to our best of for this year, let's start with, well, the GOAT himself. Here is Chicago Bulls guard Alex Caruso.
There's a lot of discussion, I feel like, in football about schemes, how an offensive coordinator works, what their plan is, defense, the same thing, having to make that adjustment. Is that similar, do you think, in basketball? I mean, I feel like what people think about in basketball is like, you got game or you don't, and you can more easily walk into another system. But how have you found or watched with other guys coming in and trying to learn a different offense or a different way of approaching the game?
Yeah, no, I think to the untrained eye, it looks like basketball is just go out there and make more shots or put up more
than
points
the other team. Right.
Than the other team. But
that's just the All-Star games.
Yeah, no, that's just the pick up at your local Lifetime. Like there's so much detail and timing that go into the schemes of basketball that people just, they probably don't see as much because there's less players, you know, which is kind of a, you know, it's kind of almost backwards. You'd think it'd be easier to see with less players. But football, they have such defined roles too. Like, you know, the linemen are going to block and there's different schemes for them to move. You know what the quarterbacks are going to do with the timing of the receivers and stuff like that. But for basketball, it's so free flowing. You have to understand what you're trying to do to such a high level that you're not thinking while you're out there playing. Because if you're out there thinking while you're playing in the NBA, you're getting beat. Because guys are too good, they're too fast, they're too athletic, they're too smart. It's the peak of professional basketball. It's so detailed, people don't really understand, and it's probably hard to have that conversation unless you have a certain level of basketball intelligence. Because there's just, you know, you'd have to break down so much and talk about so many things. And it just moves so fast, man. People don't realize how fast the NBA game moves. You know, it looks slow on TV and the guys don't look that big. There are monsters out here that are moving.
You get in the building and you see it instantly. How fast, how physical. Yeah.
Yeah, the speed of it's how fast, how physical, and people don't realize the size of some of these guys that are moving around. That's the number one thing that people tell me when they see me, when they've never met me before. And they recognize me. Like, oh, wow, I didn't know you were that tall. So, yeah, I'm 6'4", 6'5", and I'm the small guy. Like, that's
you look small to me.
Yeah, yeah.
You look small to me.
I can take him.
Yeah, I got that guy. Just give him my fadeaway jumper. When you're watching a game on TV, are you breaking it down? Are you looking and watching at what they're trying to do to the other players?
Yeah, I can't watch for like pure entertainment anymore. My brain doesn't work like that. Like, I've lost the ability to just sit down and watch a basketball game. All I do is see the flaws of what they should be doing, knowing actually like what teams like to run in certain plays and being like, defense didn't push them to the right spot. It's very analytical, but that's kind of my job. So
do you put yourself there, like, are you like, okay, I'm him, and imagine yourself moving within either an offensive or a defensive play? Do you go that far?
Yeah, for the most part, yeah. Especially defensively, just because that's kind of how my brain's wired. I get really upset watching certain guys in the league because they do their patent move, whatever it is. You know, I know that if they're in their left hand, they're going to go between the legs and step back, or it's in their right hand, they're going to go downhill. And I'm like calling it out. I'm like, he's going to go right. He's going to go right. And then the guy gets blown by right. And it's just, it's hard to watch. But that's the perfectionist and the competitor in me. It's like, I just don't see anything else.
By 2019, you're playing pretty damn well. You are the only other Laker besides Mr. James to get a game, 30 points, 10 rebounds, 5 assists. Did you feel, walking into Staples Center, how much everybody loved you?
Yeah, for sure. 100%.
Why did they? Aside from the fact that you're good.
Just to start, Staples Center is like Staples Center and the Garden. Those two places, it's different than everywhere else because it's almost like the court is lit up, you know, like a performance. You know, like it's a stand-up comedy special, or it's a concert. Like, it's dark. It's dark in the crowd. All the lights are pointing towards there, and there's this atmosphere about it that just makes it special to begin with. So that already, you know, gets the juices flowing as a basketball player in general. And then I'm fighting for my life at this point, right? I'm on two-way contract. And the way that I viewed it, like, a lot of guys, you know, they might get a two-way contract, or they might get, you know, even the first deal I got in LA, it was a 2-year, $5.5 million deal. I had the awareness to understand, like, this isn't a guarantee into the league. Like, this is still like you gotta prove it contracts. And so every time I played, like, I already have the mindset of being super competitive just because I like to play like that and I just love basketball. But now I have like almost a back against the wall mentality going into it as well, to where it's like, all right, I have to perform or else I'm not going to be here. Like, I'm not going to have a job. And you mix those two things together and you had me playing at a high level that I think a lot of NBA players don't play at every night. And I was taking advantage of guys taking plays off. And then even once, you know, I had the reputation, I think it was still like there was a lot of guys in the league that didn't believe that I could play a little bit. And it was still one of those, okay, you got to prove it things. And so my motivation just kept moving and changing. And I think, you know, Lakers fans are one of the more spoiled fan bases in pro sports with as much success as they've had. you know, but they have high expectations, and they just, you know, we talk about A&M, we drink the Kool-Aid. Lakers fans drink the Kool-Aid hard, and they are, they, if you go out there and you play to win and you play hard, they just have a certain appreciation for it. And this was, you got to remember the time this was for the franchise, right? This is coming off of after Kobe left, there wasn't a lot of success. They had young players and they were trying to find teams. It was a really low period. They're bringing in big names, Bron's in, AD's in, Rondo's in, Dwight, all these guys, the whole team. And then you had me that was just, you know, kind of sprinkled in there on top. And it was like, who's this crazy white guy that's out here just running around, dunking on people, getting steals, like playing with this fiery energy? In my opinion, I think I represented, you know, what a winning culture and winning is about. And I think that they recognize that and appreciated it.
Well, I know that I appreciate it. I love that fiery energy. As much as Caruso loves the game of basketball, this next guest loves the game of soccer. Here is the U.S. GOAT of soccer, Landon Donovan, talking about trying to get the whole of the United States to care about soccer as much as he does.
Talk to me a little bit about what you just talked about the fans. I mean, we are obviously in close proximity to Mexico, but this documentary, Good Rivals. Now, it is, if you haven't checked it out, came out last year or earlier this year on Netflix. It is about the rivalry between Mexico and the United States, greatest soccer rivalry in the world, which is incredible because of how new or young soccer is in the United States compared to so much of the world. A lot is made about 2000, 2002, and beginning to change, the pendulum beginning to switch from Mexico to the U.S. But how difficult was it at the time to find fans and support here that cared about what you guys were doing?
Yeah, incredibly. It's hard to compare the fandom of the Mexican people with the fandom of the American people at that time. Now it's pretty level now, but at that time it was non-existent. And so I think the analogy, I mean, obviously you're a baseball fan, is if not all of a sudden, but relatively quickly in the next 5 years or so, Mexican baseball was way better than Major League Baseball and way better than our players, American players. That's our national pastime, right? So that would flip things on its head and that would cause some problems. Right. So what happened in the early 2000s is a rivalry that was completely one-sided for a long time, with Mexico always winning and them just dominating us, started to change. And we beat them in that game, that 2000 game. We beat them a number of times over the next decade. And that started to change the mentality of everybody involved. Everybody looked at the rivalry differently. And then what's happened in the last, call it 7 years, is there are a lot of great rivalries around the world. What makes this one unique and why Good Rivals is, I think, so important, that film to watch, and I'm glad you watched it. We didn't even talk about that, but I'm glad you watched it. Mm-hmm. Is there's also the political component, right? That's been exacerbated over the last 7 years. And there are so many Mexicans in our country, and especially in Southern California and where we live in San Diego. There's a lot of Mexican Americans, a lot of American Mexicans, and we coexist in a really harmonious way. But in a lot of places in our country, it doesn't happen. And so it's this rivalry is just, it's heated up over the last 7 years. And on the soccer field, that's been a good thing because it makes it that much more interesting for everyone involved.
Do you feel like there are fans of the American team in Mexico, or is that one-sided?
That's a good question. I wouldn't say in Mexico, but what I saw over and over and over in my career is we would go into a stadium play against Mexico. Let's call it Soldier Field in Chicago.
Right.
And by the beginning of the game, there'd be, you would say like 75% of fans were Mexican. And then as we would end of the game, we were winning 2-0, you'd look around and somehow, and we figured out later what it was, but all of a sudden it was flipped. There were 75% American fans. And what you realize is they would walk in with a Mexican jersey over a USA jersey. once the U.S. started winning, they'd pull off the Mexican jersey and be American fans. So that's the epitome of fair weather fans right there.
Yeah. You do something that takes balls, but, you know, you talk about England and Europe, obviously Central America, where soccer is so big. You're playing in Germany already. You get offered a contract at 17. But in 2001, shortly after you began playing for the U.S. national team, you return to the United States. And essentially, with some brief exceptions, you play out your entire career in the MLS in the United States. Talk to me a little bit about that decision for you. Was that difficult for you to make? Okay.
No. So what happens is, in our sport, what happens a lot is Europe is the holy grail of places to play, right?
Right.
It's for the longest time, the most money, most prestige, best competition, most eyeballs watching, et cetera. And so for almost every player, that's where they want to play. Whether you come from Argentina or Africa or California, everybody wants to be in Europe somewhere, France, right. England, Spain, whatever. I never subscribed to that theory. I agree with all that, but the most important thing to me was playing, was actually playing games. It'd be like, they were like, Brian, for the next decade, you're going to go to acting class and you're going to practice, but you're never going to be on a show. You'd say, well, that's not
right.
That's not why I do it. Right. I don't want to do that.
Right.
And so I always wanted to play. And what the mistake a lot of players make is they'll go to Europe, and I'm using quotes, they go to Europe. So you go to a team in Europe and then you sit on the bench and you never play a game. And then you get 3 years into your career and you go, shoot, what am I really doing here? Like, the paycheck's great, but this is my life. So I always say to people, you're not a soccer practicer, you're a soccer player, right? Do you want to play or do you want to practice? So right. My decision was, I just wanted to play. And we had this young league at home that I think needed all of us to help lift it. And it made sense for me. And then I also got to play at home in front of my friends and family in LA. And to me, that was a no-brainer. You know, a lot of people disagree with that and thought I left some stuff on the table and I could have, you know, played at a higher level in other places, but I wanted to play. And that's where I got my joy.
Right. The MJ, Michael Jordan, the GOAT of U.S. soccer, 6-time MLS Cup winner. 14 consecutive All-Star. I mean, the list goes on and on. 2-time MLS MVP, 2-time MLS Cup MVP, Golden Boot, blah, 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 blah. Clearly, you had opportunities to go other places once you had established yourself. By the way, what you say makes so much sense. Like, go where you can play. Clearly, you could have played anywhere at a certain point. But did you feel a loyalty? Did you feel like you were starting something that was important with the MLS? I mean, not that you started it, but, you know what, being a part of growing something that was important here, because you essentially decide never to leave.
I did. I felt like it was, I don't know if responsibility is the right word, but we grew up in a time where we were all ambassadors for the game. So it's not like in San Diego, when Manny Machado and Fernando Tatis show up to the baseball park, play, they go home. In that, you know, they do their thing. For us, it was like, go to practice, go to an appearance afterwards, go talk to the media, go meet kids to help sell tickets. I mean, we were constantly, my whole career, trying to sell the sport. And it was just part of it. I'm not complaining. It's just, that's what it was for us. And so I enjoyed that. It was exhausting, but I enjoyed that. And when I look at Major League Soccer today and the national team today, knowing that I had a small part in that, you know, makes me prideful. Because we worked hard to help build that.
I love that. We'll be right back.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Thank God for the limits.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Here we are again. And I have just a few more snippets for you, and they're really good ones. This first last story is from my new bestie, the amazing Eric McCormick, featuring some other names that you might know. This is one of my favorite stories all year. You talk about your piano. You told me an amazing story. I have to bring up, before you went to Ryerson Theater School, you went to Sir John A. Macdonald Collegiate Institute.
Wow. Yes.
With a few other notable people, Mike Myers being one.
Mike was there.
David Furnish.
David Furnish and I were in a theater class together, 10th, 11th, and 12th grade. And part of a real little clique of three guys and my friend Helga. And we did Godspell and Pippin and the Fantastics together. And eventually he moved. We kept in touch a little bit. Then he moved to London. We lost touch. And when we finally sort of reconnected again, I was just starting to date my wife and he was just starting to date Elton John, like mid-90s. And then shortly thereafter, Will and Grace happened. And they were the first, Elton and David were the first people, I think, in the UK to see it because it didn't exist there yet. And I'd sent him a bunch of videotapes of season one, which they quite enjoyed, which led eventually to Elton being on the show. My favorite story that I'll tell till I die is just that Elton asked me to host an event for Yamaha. And Yamaha's payment to me, they paid me in piano. So I was given a baby grand piano. It sits in the center of the living room to this day. And shortly thereafter, and we'd only ever seen David and Elton in the world at a restaurant. And David called and said he was in town. And my wife, Janet, said, well, tell David to come over. He said, well, why don't you just come over, see the house? He said, sure, we'll be over at 8. And I said, Janet, He said we. He said we. He did not say I. He said we. So sure enough, Elton and David came over for dinner. My son was 6 months old, I think, at the time. And I eventually just said, Elton, you know you're going to have to christen the piano. He, without a second thought, got up, walked into the living room, sat down at the piano, looked up at me. He's wearing a sweatshirt, like a velour sweat outfit. And he said, what would you like me to play? And I thought, this is it. This is my chance. This is my chance to show him that I'm serious here. I know my shit. I'm not going to say Rocket
you're
Man.
You're a big fan.
I'm not going to say Rocket Man like some schmuck. So I said, okay, I've seen that movie too, from Goodbye Yellow Brick Road. And he looked up at me and said, oh, fuck off. I don't remember that song. And I just remember the moment feeling incensed as a fan. I was like, what do you mean you don't remember that? You're supposed to know every song. You wrote it.
You wrote it.
He didn't play that song, but I tell that story in my act occasionally, and then I've seen that movie too, which people don't remember, which is a great song.
What did he play?
He played another obscure song for me because my son was there. It's a beautiful song called The Greatest Discovery. It's about a little boy waking up and hearing all this commotion and realizing that he has a brand new baby brother. And I feel like it's an impossible song to hear and not cry at the end. It's just right. So, it's Bernie Taupin's greatest lyrics, I think. And I sing that one occasionally too. But he sang that song at the piano. And then the next day, I saw my neighbor, Thomas, and he was aware we had this new piano. We didn't know each other that well at the time. But he'd seen the piano arrive and he said, I couldn't help but overhear last night. You're getting pretty good. I said, thank you.
I don't know how you keep that lie going, but I kind of hope Eric never confessed who the real piano player was. Now we're going to hear from two people that I was so happy to talk to this year. Longtime best friends, Jason Alexander and Peter Tilden. Let's just say Jason really bared his soul or his head for this one.
If you're listening to this and haven't seen Jason on stage, he's my buddy. He's my best friend. We argue all the time. We have the podcast. We've done shows together. I'm still in awe when he walks on stage, even if I've helped write the piece. There's a different power that happens. This thing happens. And you know this, Brian, how amazing that is to own a piece of that stage for X amount of time. And it's yours. You own it and you can do with it whatever you want. And not everybody succeeds. And it fascinates me when I watch him go out there and he transforms into this thing. It's goosebump time. He does it every time. It's really powerful.
Thanks, Petey. And thank you, Peter, for not mentioning the hairline that Brian and I both
have. Well, you both have. Okay, you both have. I don't think, thank goodness, but both, which by the way, must have played into both of your psyches growing up young, because I remember everybody around me, it's that age. I remember asking this girl, Anne, who I was dating at the time, constantly, the back's thinning. It's thinning, isn't it? It's thinning, isn't it? She said, you're neurotic. I go, no, I'm thinning. And she ran into me like 30 years later. And I said, look, see, she said, it's the same. It looks the same. But what age did it happen to you?
Yeah. What about you, Jason?
I remember it almost to the day. I had braces for 9 years. I got them on. Okay. I came off when I was 17. And I remember the braces came off and I had a date that evening. So I went to the gym and I'm in the shower and I'm coming out of the shower and I'm drying off my hair and I look in the mirror and I see something like a thin spot at the very, very top, about the size of a quarter. And I went, I literally said, are you friggin' kidding me? I don't get a day, not one day when it's all working. And it really was the beginning. By the time I got to college, you know, my sophomore year of college, I had, you know, like a solid drink coaster spot up there. And, you know, and I panicked over and I cried about it. And I really, really thought it was the end of everything. But, you know, if you always say, what do you want to tell your younger self? If it hadn't happened, my career would not have happened the way it did, because I kept getting cast much older than I was,
right,
which was far more interesting roles.
Right.
And I had an energy about those roles that guys that age didn't have. So it made me kind of unique. I met my wife when I was 20. So it wasn't like I was looking good and she got fooled. She saw where it was going and went, ah, hell, I'll deal with it anyway.
Did you ever, I mean, this is, I guess this is personal. Did you ever or consider doing something to change it?
Oh my God, are you kidding? First of all, I was one of the first Rogaine users. but Rogaine, you know, Rogaine now comes in two forms. There's like an oil base and there's a foam. The oil base back in the beginning, it was like all oil. So if you have thinning hair and you put oil on your head, you look like you belong on the street. You know, so that was no good. Then I went to Hair Club for Men for a year. They had the thing where they make fishing line and they take your hair and they make a braid and then they sew the toupee onto that braid and you have to go every 4 weeks to have it, to have the crud, the cottage cheese scraped off your head because you can't shampoo under that. So I did.
By
that.
The way, if they want to use that as their ad,
yeah, right. Just,
what are that? Spread the cottage cheese.
Wow. After Seinfeld, there was a period of time where I got really close to a couple of roles, and they ultimately didn't go with me because they said he looks so much like his character on Seinfeld, and I'm going, you honestly can't see me like if I grow a mustache or I put on a wig, you can't figure that out. So as a sort of F you, I wore a toupee for 2 years publicly, making no bones about it, going, see, it changed nothing.
Right.
So if I could have changed it easily, I probably would have, but nothing was okay. Was going to be easy. And frankly, who can, you know, nobody cares anymore.
I know. I mean, I'll tell you briefly mine because it's similar in a way. Now, I already was playing older roles. I'm convinced that it was sped up by that old makeup company, Ben Nye. Remember, Ben Nye does the theater makeup. And I was convinced that cutting, thinning for older roles and putting makeup on did something. Because it was right after that where it really took a turn. So I went in. I got the prescription. I had to get a prescription for the Rogaine. My dad is a doctor and got a dermatologist that was his like buddy and got me the stuff. And then it was explained to me that it could have no effect. It could stop the loss or it could reverse like a clock. Right. But then what was explained to me was if you ever stop, the clock speeds up to wherever you would
be. Right, it leaps up.
And I thought, am I going to do this forever? Like that was, for me, that was the decision. And yeah, it was oily back then at the time, at least. It kind of had a...
like a fish oil.
Alcohol.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yes, kind of smell. Anyway, so I stopped.
By the way, well, I blame the Jufro phenomena of 1976. Where every Jewish boy was getting an afro, and I did it. And that's when I noticed the spot. And I went, sure, I burnt every follicle. I put acid and heat, and I killed every follicle.
Yeah.
Look at us now, Jason. We get more beautiful with age. Maybe a little more bald, too, but definitely more beautiful. Now, I want to leave you all with one last clip from Rosie O'Donnell. I still kind of can't believe I got to hang out with the Rosie O'Donnell. Obviously, she's an icon who has made a lasting impression on a whole generation of people. But don't take my word for it. What do you see now as the show's legacy after it's now done?
I would say it was a time of the legacy of the show, I think, is love. Because I think the reason that I was successful is because I really loved Florence Henderson. And when I had her on the show, it was trippy to think that I would dream that she would be my mom and that here she is sitting next to me and being motherly. Florence Henderson would come over to my house and play with Parker and these older women who knew that I was a motherless child, you know, and stepped in a magical way, almost, you know. There was something magical about the show. It was pure and it was kind and it was fun. I think we had fun, you know, and everybody wanted to be in the audience. It was a tiny little studio with like 200 seats and everybody wanted to be there. And then when I did Tickle Me Elmo, I remember getting a call from Aaron Spelling. Aaron Spelling, like one of the richest men in the world, calls me to ask me if I had 4 Tickle Me Elmos for his grandchildren. I was like, okay, sir. Well, listen, thank you for Dynasty. I enjoyed that so much when I was a child. Let me get back to you. And then I go to my assistant, find 4 fucking Elmos for Aaron Spelling. Like, and then I think, whose life is this? This is a crazy life, you know? Right. It's a crazy life. And I never really believed at the height of like when, oh, you're the most influential. You're on this list. You're on that list. You know, I usually didn't go to the party. You know, I didn't always believe it. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like I have a healthy amount of reality in my show business. I don't know. Is that weird to say?
No, I think I get it. But you must be aware, or you should be aware, of the countless doors that you opened in your career for other people in the LGBTQ community. You opened up a lot of doors during this time and after, for people that came after you. Do you are you proud of that? Do you acknowledge that to yourself?
Yes. Yes. I definitely do. And I feel that some people are marathon runners and some people are sprinters. And I knew that I'm hardly a jogger, right? I work very, very hard, but I'm tired, you know, like I want to lay down and watch something. Like I don't have the kind of energy that I did back then. And it was a very large amount of work. But I do realize that. And you know, I was at Nobu yesterday and this
it's so funny because you're so not this. I'm going to totally interrupt you. That is like the most like
Hollywood
drama.
I know.
Why was it Nobu yesterday?
Anyway,
sorry.
I've never seen
it. You're like the opposite of that. So I had to at least call it
you
out.
You have to. I've never seen a Kardashian there. I just want you to know. I go there like 3 or 4 times a week. It's almost like my neighborhood restaurant. I'm right on the beach in Malibu and right next door is Nobu.
I just ate at Nobu 2 nights in a row in Vegas.
I would eat it every day. But can I read this to you, what this note that happened at Nobu?
Yes.
So I see this family sitting in front of me, and they're very young. I thought at first they were teenagers, but very kind of good looking. Like he looked like an artist to me. Like I thought he had on real funky clothes. I bet he's a fashion designer, I thought to myself. And what a pretty wife. And
right.
I go to get the check and the guy says, oh, it's paid for. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, there's a note for you. And apparently this young man paid my bill and left with and never bothered me. But he left me this note. Rosie, thank you for being you and setting an example of what it means to be yourself in the face of adversity and negativity. Because of your strength and bravery, a little boy found the light in a childhood riddled with violence, drug abuse, and depression. And now I'm one of the biggest rappers in the whole world. Thank you with unconditional reverence. Logic. Bobby Hall. Now, I had no idea who Logic was, but I felt like this is the legacy of the show, that there are millions of artists and they were inspired and they knew to go there and they knew what we were selling was membership in this world. And I was so blown away. I go on to my son who's 23 and my daughter who's 20 and I send the copy of it to both of them and they both call me screaming on the phone. Screaming, I am going to use this for the next 3 years. Like Blake was like, do you want to keep it? I'm like, yes, I'm keeping it. He's like, I want to show my friends. I'm like, I'll send you a picture of it, you know. But I was so moved.
That makes me so happy.
Yeah.
For you.
Yeah.
That makes me so happy that happened for you. Obviously for Logic as well. that he was able to come out of a difficult situation in part because of you, but for him to tell you that.
Right. And to buy me a incredible. Very expensive dinner as well, a lunch with a friend of mine who was I knew was a comedian years ago, and I hadn't seen in 40 years. We had a lunch and talked about doing stand-up in the old days, but he did. And I thought, you know, and I think to myself, every time that somebody writes to me or stops me or tells me, you know, is a gift. It's a gift. And my children make fun of me because of the difference between when they were little and we used to go to the mall and going to the mall now. And or we go to a baseball game or a football game. And my sons will totally rag on me like, Mom, nobody recognized you at the whole game. You know, I'm like, well, honey, Mommy's lost it. I got gray hair now and I don't know what to tell you. Nobody knew you.
You know, I think my favorite thing about this job, about art and entertainment in general, is how deeply it can impact people. Television, film, music, they can change someone's life, like Rosie apparently did for Logic. You know, I was on a little show, The Office. I have always said the greatest gift that the show ever gave me was hearing from people how much that work affected them. I consider it a gift to me. The idea of making someone's life better, even for just a day or a moment. And you know what made my life better today? Listening back to these great moments from 2023 with all of the incredible guests that we've had. I want to thank everyone who was a part of this podcast this year, not just the guests, but the incredible crew and production team that I get to work with, and all of you, the listeners, who truly allow me to keep doing this. So, happy new year to everyone, and yeah, we'll see you next year. Off the Beat is hosted and executive produced by me, Brian Baumgartner, alongside our executive producer, Ling Lee. Our senior producer is Diego Tapia. Our producers are Liz Hayes, Hannah Harris, and Emily Carr. Our talent producer is Ryan Papa Zachary, and our intern is Ali Amir Sahin. Our theme song, Bubble and Squeak, performed by the one and only Creed Bratton.
The journey to a smoke-free future can be a long and winding road, but if you're ready for a change, consider taking Zyn for a spin. Zyn nicotine pouches offer a fresh way to discover your nicotine satisfaction. Anywhere, anytime. No smoke, no spit, and no lingering odor. Get in gear with the Zyn 10 Challenge and enjoy 10 smoke-free, spit-free days for just $5.95. Order online and start your new journey today. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elia Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.